Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus on Albany. My guest today is Robert Maripol. Robert is the son of Ethel and Julius Rosenberg, who were executed by the state of New York in 1953. And he's here to talk about, you know, the latest stories about Donald Trump and Mitch McConnell. And I've got to say this, every time I think about it, it's just so horrific. You and your brother were just little boys then, and you see all this stuff going on now, and you're basically a kind of, you know, forgiving person, I think. So, you know, if it was me, I would be ripping walls down right now. When you hear everything that's going on, what's your thoughts about it?
Well, you know, it is, I mean, either to be very angry or very despairing makes perfect sense given what we're confronted with. It's a perfectly understandable reaction. And I do want to make a couple of very minor corrections. It's true that my parents were executed in the state of New York, but they actually were executed not by the state of New York, but by the federal government. And the reason I bring that up is the reason they had to be executed in Sing Sing prison was because the feds at that point, the federal government, executed so few people, they actually had no federal execution chambers. You know, that's sort of nowadays we find that hard to imagine, but it shows that in some ways we've gone backwards. And the reason I'm focusing initially on this aspect of the current situation is for the last, I don't know how long, at least 10 years, the federal government has not pursued any executions. And the federal attorney general has not pursued any executions. But Trump's new attorney general, Barr, just announced that they're going to start pursuing executions once again. And that, you know, again, brings us kind of full circle back to the 1950s and my parents' case. And in particular, because the assistant prosecutor in my parents' case was Roy Cohn. And Roy Cohn acted as Trump's father's and Trump's attorney during a big housing case, which they got off with an agreement, a settlement. It was a housing discrimination case. The Trump family was notorious for discriminating against African Americans, and finally it caught up with them. And they had to pay a big settlement, but of course part of the deal was they admitted no wrongdoing. Of course, he learned from Roy Cohn never to admit wrongdoing. So we have Roy Cohn's protege, one of the most despicable people of the 20th century. We have Roy Cohn's protege in the White House. And we have general lawlessness going on. But the thing that has struck me this summer that's a little different, Cynthia, I've talked with you regularly, probably about once every 3 months or so. And it's over the summer that I think I began to get a little bit more frightened of the ideology and what's going on. And of course, a lot of people did because of all the mass shootings. But it's also because of this extreme right-wing ideology that is taking hold. And it's the multifaceted aspects of it. This sort of Aryan culture, you know, the reason that Europe, Western Europe, jumped ahead of the rest of the world was because the Vikings came and they killed the weak people and they they raped the women, and they had dynamic new generations of people emerging, and all this creative energy and exaltation of warfare led to the emergence of Western civilization and all of its achievements. And therefore, these people are espousing violence. They're espousing misogyny. I mean, one of their main attacks is against women, particularly white women, because they're not having white babies. Too many of them are engaging in birth control. Too many of them seek abortions. Too many of them are hanging out. You know, there's too many mixed race couples. White women aren't doing their duty. So we have to corral them, control them, and in some cases murder them to show them what must be done. And you put this ideology together, it's all a very neat little package. And you get all these 20-year-old white people with automatic weapons shooting up people. And who knows where it's going to happen next. And that's pretty frightening.
I originally come from Long Island, and I live next door to a couple that were born in Germany during the Second World War. So it was like a day or two after the election in 2016. I called my friend, and we were talking about it, and she was pretty upset. Now, she was just a baby in Berlin during the Second World War, and she was really upset. She was crying, and she said, I can't believe this country voted for Donald Trump. And I'm thinking, well, you know, how bad can it be? We have Congress. There's checks and balances. But it seems like everything is just spinning out of control. And maybe she was right, and I was too arrogant in my judgment.
Well, I wouldn't want to call it arrogance, but I think we all were a little bit complacent in thinking that the institutions that we had were going to protect us. But what we found out is these institutions are no stronger than the people who are staffing them. And when the people who are staffing them are intimidated, they don't do, you know, it's been a real struggle. And someone as powerful as the president essentially saying, I'm going to make up my own rules, and nothing you do is going to change that. And then the self-interested people who support him know that if they don't support him, they're going to have all sorts of problems maintaining their jobs. The system all of a sudden becomes a lot more fragile. And, you know, we do face, I mean, I don't want to be alarmist, and I don't really know what's going to happen come down the line. But we for the first time, I've seriously, when people have said to me over the last few years, oh, if Donald Trump loses the next election, he won't leave office. He'll claim it's all a fake, and he'll refuse to leave. And I said, oh, no, that's alarmist. That's scary. That you know, that's not going to happen. That's the system's too strong to tolerate that. And now when I look at it and I hear people saying that, I think, well, it could happen because the defiance is so clear and the appeal to ultra-right-wing militarist kind of we're going to enforce things with our guns if that's what we have to do. Attitude, it seems like he's setting himself up to possibly do something like that. So it is a very frightening time.
Let me ask you this. I saw Howard Stern on Anderson Cooper recently, and Howard Stern was talking about the 2016 election. And he said that Donald Trump had run for president as a publicity stunt, that he really does not like being president. Okay, those two statements. Now, it was a publicity stunt, and he doesn't like being president. Okay, we're looking at 2020 now. And if he really doesn't like being president, why does he not just get off stage very gracefully and do something else? Why
well,
is he insulting
you know,
all this?
Yeah. I can't, you know, I can't get inside of Donald Trump's head, and I also can't get inside of Howard Stern's head. Both of them are publicity hounds, and both of them say all sorts of cuckoo things every once in a while. So I'm not a big Howard Stern fan, but I think what you just said makes a lot of sense, that if he really hates what he's doing so much, why is he trying so hard to keep doing it? That doesn't compute for me. It's clear that what he hates about the presidency is the fact that he's got so much opposition, that he can't just do what he wants, like in his own company. That he's trying to make it that way, but you know, he keeps being exposed, and not everybody loves him. In fact, a lot of people hate him, and he can't stand that. So I think there's probably aspects of his situation that he doesn't like. But that's different from saying he doesn't like the presidency. And Howard Stern may have been right that Trump started out to do this as a publicity stunt, and still seems to be oriented towards figuring out a way to make money out of all this and to enhance his brand. And so that may have been the way it started. But then once he got some real traction and it became a reality, I think he liked all the attention. He likes being the most powerful man in the world. That's what he likes being. So I think Howard Stern is just plain wrong. He might not like the constraints of the presidency, but being the president of the United States is being the most powerful man in the world, and I think he loves that.
Let's talk a little bit about Trump and his relationship with Russia. It seems like Trump is really fond of Putin.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so during the 50s, the Russians were our so-called enemies. But now, Donald Trump seems to really be fond of Putin. Are people alarmed by that, do you think? I mean,
well, it depends
Putin
on which people. I mean, there
back.
Are.
You know,
there
he's
are
a
people.
Throwback.
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing is that there are people who are alarmed by that relationship, a lot of people. And then there are a lot of people who basically have handed to Trump their brains. What I mean by that is they're Trump supporters who are going to support him no matter what. And whatever he says must be true. Whatever attack against him must be false. And so if he's saying there was no Russian interference, there must be no Russian interference. As I said, these people have essentially forfeited their judgment to Trump. They've handed it over and they said, we are going to be your minions. We will do whatever you say we should do. We are going to act in accordance with your wishes at all times. And those people aren't alarmed. The other people, of course, you know, Trump, I think that Trump's love affair with Putin probably has financial aspects. Are probably financial entanglements that I hope sooner or later one of these investigations really clarifies exactly what it is and pins it down. The other thing is that the way Putin controls Russia is the way that Trump would like to control the United States. So he aspires to a Putin-like position, and he admires the power that Putin has accumulated to himself, and Trump wishes he had that power. But there's also that financial aspect, which is kind of lurking in the background, which we don't quite understand. And of course, for me, looking at at Russia today, it seems like what Trump likes about Russia is everything that's wrong with Russia, that it's authoritarian, that it is an extractionist nation that is essentially making money off of destroying the climate and resource base of the planet, all which fits in with what Trump likes to do as well. So I don't think it's surprising. And what it's going to lead to in 2020, you know, how fair the next election is going to be, how much interference there's going to be. Well, that's hard to say. But I will say one thing that, of course, a lot of the media ignores, and that is that while it's obvious that there's interference in our elections going on, and that's a terrible thing, we interfere in other countries' elections constantly, and nobody seems to complain about that. So perhaps in our situation, it's just chickens coming home to roost, and we're getting a taste of our own medicine. And there are a lot of people who don't like it. But those people who don't like it should also be saying, we shouldn't be doing it either. And they're not saying that.
One of the reasons the news media says that Putin and Trump are friendly is because Trump is monetizing his relationship. He's benefiting from it. Him and his family are benefiting financially from Putin. And people in this country should be up in arms about that. They're not receiving any benefits from this.
Yeah, it is. I don't know how direct the benefit is that you described, but indirectly, he's interested in financial gain, and the policies he's pursuing are those policies which are going to make him more money. And he's going to do that with Putin, and he's going to do it domestically. I mean, after all, he handed himself a great big gift with this tax cut that occurred at the end of last year. And that had nothing to do with Putin, but it sure was good for Trump. So this is, you know, when you're dealing with Trump, you always have to think in terms of the finances, because that seems to be the most important thing to him.
Wow. So what do you envision, you know, over the next 14 months?
Well, you know, it's really hard to say. I think we're going to have a constant stream of investigation going on by the House of Representatives. And whether that is effective enough to really expose and pin down the crook in the White House, you know, that remains to be seen. I certainly hope the Democrats can manage to do things in a dramatic way and that it really reaches a lot of people. Whether they do that or not, well, that remains to be seen. But I think that's what they're trying to do. And then, of course, we have a massive Democratic field of people who want to replace Trump. And I think right now, it is the Democrats' election to win. In other words, I think that the chances are that they're in a stronger position in 2020 than Trump is. But that said, the Democrats are quite capable of blowing it, just like they did in 2016. And particularly if they're going to elect an increasingly incompetent Joe Biden. You know, if he's going to be their nominee, which could happen because the field is so split between everybody else, Trump could win. And that's a very terrifying prospect. That said, you know, we have two strong progressive candidates in Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. And you know, we'd be in much better shape if somehow the two of them could go into some sort of coalition. but I fear that's not going to happen. So I'm sort of holding my breath about that and see where it goes, because frankly, I think if Biden is nominated, I think there's a good chance that we're doomed. And I know that sounds very dramatic, but unfortunately, I think it's true. So I think there are good possibilities. I think either Warren or Sanders could beat Trump quite handily. I know that there are a lot of mainstream pundits who disagree with that, but they have this belief in the undecided voter. Okay, this sense that, you know, the Biden people and the whole strategy is based upon the idea that there's core of people in the center who are undecided, and they went for Trump last time, and if we can pull them back and go for a Democrat this time, then Trump will be defeated. Well, I don't think they're undivided. They're undecided voters. There are conflicted voters. What I mean by a conflicted voter is, for instance, someone who's a working class Catholic who's anti-abortion. If the Democratic candidate is pushing Medicare for all and a $15 minimum wage and the kinds of things that working class people desperately need in this country, that's mm-hmm. going to override, I believe, the fact that the Democrats are likely to be pro-choice and not anti-abortion. But if you get some sort of mainstream Democrat who's not going to support, oh, we can't afford Medicare for all, and we can't afford to raise the minimum wage too much, we have to cater to business. If we get a Democrat who's catering to Wall Street, then all of a sudden that same voter's position on abortion is going to determine who he votes for. And that's what we have to avoid. It is this idea that there are these people in the center who are really controlling the situation. It's just not true. There, people right now, everything is so polarized, and people hold their position so strongly that you don't get these wavering, undecided people in the middle of things. It's an illusion. And trying to cater to a non-existent group is a sure way to lose an election.
You know, I've been mentioning to my friends lately, you know, a lot of people dislike Trump and they're, you know, exhibiting their anger towards Trump. But I look at it another way. It's because Hillary Clinton was a flawed candidate. So I believe the rise of Trump on the Democratic Party and Hillary Clinton herself. And I think that Joe Biden is like a throwback from many years ago. The fact that he's older, I mean, we're in that age bracket ourselves,
yes.
But, you know, I think and not that Donald Trump is young, but, you know. Mm-hmm.
It's ironic.
Right.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was just saying it's ironic that if you look at Trump, Warren, Sanders, and Biden, they're all at least 70 years old. It's kind of amazing, and yet I think those are the big four right now, and it isn't just a question of age, but I think different people age differently. I mean, I look at someone like Bernie Sanders, who's, I don't know, 70. He's several years older than I am. And he's got so much more energy than I do. I mean, I look at myself. I'm 72. I would never want to run for a major political office. It's too much work. It's too hard. I'm slowing down, you know. But someone like Sanders seems to have more energy than anybody. Biden, on the other hand, seems to be stumbling. And, you know, some people do just fine until they're almost 90. And some people, once they get to be 70, they start slowing down. And that's the reality. That's the reality of human physiology and the facts, what we face. But But to go back to your point about Clinton, I think that the problem with Clinton is she really didn't stand for anything. What she stood for was, I'm not Trump. And the people who backed her were corporate America and Wall Street. And corporate America and Wall Street have screwed too many people in the United States. And Trump, the billionaire, ran as the anti-Wall Street person, which is, you know, a complete lie. But it worked. You know, we just hope that people aren't fooled again. Because 4 more years of this, God knows where we'll be.
Wow. You want to venture a prediction?
Excuse me, I didn't quite catch that. My prediction?
You want to venture a prediction of another 5 years of Trump?
Oh, God. Well, no, I would hate to predict that. And I think it probably won't happen. But, you know, probably is very far removed from certainly. And I didn't think it was going to happen the first time around, so I'm not quite so sure of my judgment. But I do think that the idea that we have to find the safest Democrat is actually the best way to lose. That's not a time for that. We don't need that.
Wow. So you know what? I think this conversation is to be continued. But tell our listeners a little bit about your niece and what she's doing.
Oh, yes, I meant to do that. My niece, Ivy Miropoulos, film Bully Coward Victim is about Roy Cohn. It's an HBO-funded documentary that is premiering. It's sort of the first premiere. It probably won't actually be on HBO until after the turn of the year. But the first premiere public showing is happening at the New York Film Festival on September 29th and September 30th. Unfortunately, for your listeners, tickets to those two performances sold out within 3 hours. So there are no tickets available. We'll see how it's received. And of course, anything that has to do with Roy Cohn also has to do with Donald Trump. I've seen what's called a rough cut of the film, before the final editing. And I think it's going to be very powerful, and it's very juicy. I don't want to, no spoilers here. I'm not going to say anything, but there's another Trump documentary that was released earlier called Where's My Roy Cohn? And that's a more standard documentary where the typical talking heads tell the typical story of Roy Cohn. And it's done competently, but I don't think it's a real exciting documentary. On the other hand, I think Ivy's documentary, which has got some really juicy stuff in it about Roy Cohn and his life, is going to be quite exciting. And so I am anxiously looking forward to September 29th. I'll be there at the showing, and hopefully the response of the audience will be what I expect.
She also did a documentary about your parents. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, she did a documentary. She's done other documentaries. I think her most recent one was about the nuclear power plant on the Hudson River. This one is the first one she did was called Heir to an Execution. And it was her story of, as a young person, trying to explore what happened to her family and the decisions, the basis of the decisions of her grandparents, and then how the family reacted to that, and trying to reconnect with her cousins whose relationships were all severed by this. And so it's a very personal and it's a very powerful film. Again, also HBO. So you can probably find it online still, especially if you're an HBO subscriber. So she's quite talented and does very dynamic material. So again, that's another reason why I'm looking forward to this newest documentary.
Terrific. So, Robert, I'm sure that between now and 2020, we'll be talking again. So,
mm-hmm.
in the final minutes, do you have any? Do you have any final thoughts that you'd like to share?
Well, I just think that my final thought is that a week from Friday is the big international climate strike. I know this is different from what we've been talking about, but, you know, one of the things that Trump is doing is accelerating the rush towards climate change apocalypse through his extractionist policies. And the whole world is waking up because, you know, whether it be the Bahamas or whether it be the Amazon jungle burning or whether it be the heat wave in France killing another 15,000 people, it's going on all over the world. In fact, there's supposedly, my understanding is there are more fires burning in Central Africa now than there are in the Amazon basin. So we are in a dire situation, a civilization situation, threatening civilization, an extinction threatening situation. And it's time for people to say, no more business as usual. So I urge everybody to take some action on the 20th to indicate your support for making stopping climate change the number one priority, because if we don't do that, we're all gone.
Wow. So, Robert, we will talk again. You've been listening to Robert Verpo. This is Focused on Albany. If you like this show, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, download on your smartphone, subscribe to iTunes. If you have a comment about this show, hashtag Focus on Albany. Robert, have a great day, and we'll talk again soon. And thank you, everybody,
okay,
for listening. Have a great day.
You too, Cynthia.
Bye.
Talk to you soon.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You. Bye.